with pro basketball.
Kim, the National Basketball Association finals tip off later Thursday night in the western U.S. city of Oakland, California, where the Golden State Warriors will host the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 1 of the Best of 7 Championship Series. Basketball fans are eager to see how Golden State's Stephen Curry, the league's reigning most valuable player, does against Cleveland's LeBron James, a four-time MVP. Now, the two players probably won't guard each other much during the finals because they play different positions. Curry is likely to be matched against Kyrie Irving, Cleveland's three-time All-Star guard, who, like Curry, is an excellent ball handler. In fact, LeBron says they're two of the greatest ball handlers in NBA history.
They are two of the best ball handlers that this league has ever seen. Their ability to make shots off the handle, Steph's ability to use his handle to get off shots, three step backs, Kyrie's ability to be crafty, use his ability to get into the lane and make shots. You know, when you have a handle like that, you can pretty much get any shot you want, and they both show you that with their speed, their change of pace, their ball handling, and then their ability to shoot the ball. They can absolutely just shoot the rock. And when you have a handle like that, it just keeps the defender, keeps the second line of defense, the third line of defense just so off kilter because you don't quite know exactly where they're going to be.
LeBron James has a lot of respect for Steph Curry, the sharp shooting guard for the Warriors, and the feeling is mutual.
I mean, he's a great talent. He seems to be able to get to anywhere he wants to on the floor. He's a gamer. You know he's going to be ready for big moments. And he's got a motor that you always got to be ready. There's no time that you can kind of take a possession off against him. So you always got to be locked into your game plan. You're not going to, you know, totally shut him down. I don't think that's been done before.
Steph Curry says LeBron James has given him some tips during his six-year NBA career, and he remembers one moment during his rookie season in 2009-2010.
Most memorable conversation I had with him was after, I think, a game in Cleveland my rookie year. And they beat us that night, but he pulled me off to the side right before I left the court and kind of, he understood the situation I was in as a rookie. We were not a very good team at the time. I was trying to find my way as a player and basically just said, one thing you control is your preparation every single game, how you're going to find ways to get better and just having tunnel vision. No matter what's going on around you, you can control, you know, your effort every game, your professionalism and just what you do day in, day out to get yourself ready. And there's going to be a time when it's all going to kind of work out because you'll be ready for that moment. So not to get caught up in the drama of what was going on in my team or the situation, because you hopefully have a long career.
That's Golden State Warriors basketball star Steph Curry talking about LeBron James. Curry and the Warriors will host LeBron and the Cavaliers later Thursday night in Oakland, California, in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Australian big man Andrew Bogut is the starting center for the Warriors, and he's backed up by Festus Ezeli, the pride of Benin City, Nigeria, and the subject of the latest Sunny Side of Sports blog post. VOA intern and guest blogger Jonah Haskell writes how Festus, then a young teenager, came here to the United States where he learned the game of basketball. You can read the blog post at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. This VOA programming note, I greatly enjoyed being guest host this week on our hashtag VOA TV program, which focused on Special Olympics. Special Olympics is the world's largest sports organization for children and adults with intellectual disabilities, providing training and competitions for almost 5 million athletes in about 170 countries. One of the guests on hashtag VOA was Tim Shriver, whose late mother, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, founded Special Olympics almost 50 years ago. Tim is the chairman of Special Olympics, the same position his late father, Sergeant Shriver, held with the organization. I asked Tim Shriver, how did your parents inspire you to carry the torch of Special Olympics?
The biggest lesson they taught me, and I think they taught it to so many other people, is that it was really important to commit yourself to something that will change the world, make it a little bit better. Even if your contribution is small, give your best to making the world a little bit better. The second thing they taught is you can have fun doing that. It doesn't always have to be hard work and labor. It can also be joy. And my mother in particular believed that sport was a way that we could teach one another very important lessons. Lessons about trust, about confidence, lessons about teamwork and camaraderie, lessons about learning to understand and accept one another as teammates. And so we have in Special Olympics this great combination, I think it's almost unmatchable, of being gladiators for justice, fighting against intolerance, fighting against the neglect that exists around the world for people with intellectual differences, but at the same time doing it by having a good time, playing our way into the hearts and minds of millions and millions of people around the world, and by playing our way into their hearts, we hope, encouraging them to be more tolerant and accepting and welcoming of all their brothers and sisters who are different.
Tim, I mentioned the broad reach of Special Olympics. It goes all over the world.
Yeah.
Can you talk about growth in, say, Africa and Asia?
Well, we have now almost 5 million athletes who participate at least once during the year in a Special Olympics event in their community. 1 million in China, 1 million in India, over 100,000 in sub-Saharan Africa and around the world, all throughout the Middle East, in countries that have struggled with war, like Afghanistan and Rwanda, countries that have fast-growing economies like China and India, countries with older civilizations like Japan and Korea. All of these places have welcomed the athletes of Special Olympics because I think the unifying power of sport, everybody loves to play, no matter what age, but also the compelling nature of the challenge to change. So we're lucky to boast a movement that was, yes, born in the United States, conceived by an American woman, athlete, which is rare in the annals of great social change movements, but now is owned and shared really by the entire world, a world that has embraced volunteerism, embraced the power of sport, and embraced the civil rights movement that is this movement for people with intellectual differences who still are so misunderstood.
We saw that torch relay at the opening of the program,
yeah.
And I know one Special Olympics athlete in particular, you kind of gave a shout out for as part of that relay.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Well, Marty, I lit the flame, carried the flame for Marty Sheets. Marty Sheets died just about 10 days ago. He was a young man born with Down syndrome in North Carolina. He grew up in a time when nobody would have expected to see him in a village or in a town or in a city, in a school. His mother and father pushed him to be included. He ended up being selected because of his swimming to go to the first ever Special Olympics Games in 1968. Again, getting on a plane for the first time. These are all new experiences. Marty might have been an uncommon sight in his time, but he did something equally uncommon, which is he changed the way people saw Down syndrome. Marty helped people not to see Down syndrome, but to see Marty. And at the age of 62, his death marked the end of a great pioneer of justice and social change, and he inspires me every day, even now.
That's Tim Shriver, the chairman of Special Olympics, and he spoke with me at our Voice of America studios here in Washington. And mark your calendars, the Special Olympics World Games will be held in Los Angeles, California, from July 25th to August 2nd. The 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup Football Tournament will kick off in Canada on Saturday. The opening match will take place in the Western Canadian city of Edmonton, where host Canada will take on China. The tournament features an expanded field of 24 teams this year, up from 16 in previous years. This means that 8 new teams will be making their first Women's World Cup appearances, including 2 African squads. Cameroon and Ivory Coast will look to make a mark in their inaugural tournament. but their work will be cut out for them as the Ivorians are grouped with world number one Germany, while Cameroon will have to contend with reigning world champion Japan in Group C. World Cup veterans Nigeria are also in a tough group, Group G. It includes three teams that are ranked number 10 or higher, Australia, Sweden, and the two-time world champion United States. The Super Falcons of Nigeria, who have appeared in the last seven Women's World Cups, are hoping their experience can help them duplicate or even surpass their great 1999 performance. That year, the Nigerians became the only African women's team to reach a World Cup quarterfinal. Ivory Coast will play their opening game against Germany on Sunday, while Cameroon and Nigeria will begin their campaigns the next day on Monday. Cameroon plays Ecuador, while Nigeria will take on Sweden. Moving across the Pacific and deep down under, the FIFA Under-20 World Cup continued Thursday in New Zealand with four games of Group E and F action. Nigerians Isaac Success and Godwin Savior lived up to their names, combining to score three goals as the Flying Eagles soared to a 4-0 win over North Korea. This puts the African youth champions on the brink of a quarterfinal appearance. Meanwhile, Fiji produced one of the biggest upsets in world football history as they beat Honduras 3-0. This was the island nation's first ever win at a FIFA tournament on any level. Germany, on the other hand, surprised no one with a 3-0 victory over Uzbekistan, and Brazil came from behind to defeat Hungary 2-1. With 6 points each, the Germans and the Brazilians follow the USA and Portugal as the third and fourth teams to clinch quarterfinal berths at New Zealand.